Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Hope you are all doing fine. And yet another tumultuous week. But you know, I'm going to kind of cut through all the nonsense that's been going on this week. You've heard lots of it on mainstream media and most of it distorted. And I'm going to bring you, because it's my job, the big picture. There's enough dots out there now to connect, that I think we can come to a reasonable conclusion about A, what the Democrats are doing, B, why they're really doing it, and being pissed off over the election is just a tiny increment of that, and C, who's behind it. We got enough dots to do this. And it's important that you understand it, because there's something much, much, much bigger at play than the daily strife that we're hearing, the Sessions thing and, you know, the Trump speech and all that kind of stuff. Although all those things play into it, but they're symptoms of the disease that we're facing. They are not the disease. You know, it's kind of like when you go to the doctor and you go, hey, doc, man, my throat is really sore. What's going on? He looks at you, and he pokes, and he prods you, and he bills you, of course. And hopefully you don't have Obamacare. And then he says, here's your prescription. Well, the prescription is for the symptoms. The prescription isn't going to cure you. So that's the analogy, as poor or as great as you may think it is, that I'm going to use for this. And we're going to talk about both the right and the left sides of what's going on relative to Trump and the concerted, organized, funded, and pre-planned. That's really important, as you'll see during this show. This was pre-planned, folks. This was in planning prior to the election and went into high gear planning right after the election. And I'm going to bring some things back to your memory that you've probably forgotten. Little things, but they all add up. Like Obama telling Hillary Clinton, really before the election was over, to concede. You know, that's just not an Obama type of thing to do. He's the last guy to concede anything, unless he's conceding nothing. And I think that's what's going on, and I'm going to show you this morning. Now, we're also going to talk a little bit about tonight. We're going to be talking about the unholy alliance of the left and radical Islam. You know, I'm almost positive, the very first person in media to bring this to your attention and to sound the alarm. In the search bar, and I've told you this in other shows, type in Unholy Alliance. And by the way, I have a slew of shows, including a bunch of national interviews, dating back several years, actually, on this radical Islam left coalition that was forming kind of amorphously to begin with, but now has really started to take shape, really take shape. And there's a reason for it. And there was actually, this week, two articles in two separate deals that I get, and I get a lot. One was in WorldNet Daily, and the other in Christian Conservative News. And both of them, have come to the conclusion that I came to quite some time ago, and that is, yes, there's a lot of little backslapping going on between Islamists, and the extreme left. But they also, I might add, in this one article I'm going to go over with you, they also do a great job of bringing out some points that I hadn't thought of. What the similarities are between the two, other than their shared hatred of America, American values, and their shared love of power and control. Really good article. Really good article. And I'll direct you to the gentleman who wrote it, who also has a book coming out, which I have not read. Now, I'm going to finish up the show, if we have time, and I always run out of time, with a warning. You know, it's not my job to bring you all good news. And some people, by the emails I get, would say that I never bring good news. I'm dark. I'm a dark person. The dark night of the radio waves. Let me demonstrate the power of this fully operational Death Star. Anyway, I digress. So that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to review all this stuff. I'm going to tie it all in together for you and see what you think. See what you think when I'm done. So why don't we start off with Trump's speech. Now, you've heard all about the speech. I'm not going to talk about that. He did a great job. He did such a great job, in fact, that he stunned the Democrats, the progressives. I mean, we call them Democrats, but they're not. And that speech put them in panic mode because they realize that he reached people. I mean, they could read the polls as well as you and I could. There was a morning consult political poll the day after his speech. Not only was there like a, and this goes to any poll, 70 to 80% approval of the speech, which is phenomenal. But on top of that, 56% of Americans think that Trump has been faithful to the promises he made. Only 27% think he has not been. You know how he said, basically, all I've done is keep my promises? Well, the American public agrees with him by a wide, wide majority. Then, going further into that poll, which is a pretty good poll, and a pretty reliable pollster that doesn't do a lot of polls and is apolitical, 69% of the voters believe Trump has accomplished as much or more than they expected. That's a key finding. It ties right into what I'm going to be telling you about this morning. And 71% of Americans in this poll said at the time of this poll, which was this week, that America... Let me rephrase that. 71% of Americans had said, right after Trump's election, that America was on the wrong track. That figure has declined to 57%. Now, obviously still a majority of folks think America is in some way, shape, or form on the wrong track, and you know that 30% of that, or half of that, is the left. You know, the open border crowd. But that's still a remarkable drop. Now, you know, if I can read polls, the Dems can read polls. And what the Dems are seeing out there, that despite their best efforts, Trump is gaining ground. He's getting things done. The long-term goals of the Democrats, I'm going to tie all this in for you as we go through the different segments in this show. The long-term goals of the Democrats is not just to get rid of Trump, because Trump is a threat to their establishment. In fact, Trump is a threat to the establishment. He is a threat to the global elite. Now, personally, I don't think he's as much a threat as they think, because if you look carefully at his policies, they kind of tie in with some of the things the deep state, the shadow government, really wants. But that's probably a coincidence. And to really drain the swamp, What Trump would have to do, and we're going to talk about it at the end of the show, is he would have, in his speech on Tuesday night, he would have had to say, you know, we are a mess. And I mean much more strongly than he's already said it. He would have to say, we're going to have to raise interest rates. We're going to have to cut this budget by 30% other than the military. We're going to have to reform entitlements. We're going to have to get this debt not only under control, but going down rapidly. The debt, by the way, which is a time bomb. And I don't mean just the debt as a time bomb, both the funded and unfunded liabilities. But there's a big deal coming March 15th, and you've heard, I doubt most of you have heard about it at all, or you've heard about it in passing. But it could spell big trouble for Trump's agenda. The Democrats know this. The Democrats also know that what you don't get done by, let's say, May or so, in a legislative year, you're not going to get done over the summer because, you know, the damn Congress is on break. Which means you really have the legislative months of September and part of October. And, of course, at the end of that time period, you're into the holiday season and more breaks. So the bottom line is, you only have from January to May, September and October, and that's just part of October, to get your stuff done in Congress. The Dems know this. That's why every day they can delay a cabinet pick. Every day they can delay another appointment they have to vote on. Every roadblock they can throw up that creates a delay or creates a distraction or gets the administration or the Republicans off track, and it's easy to get the Republicans off track. It's unbelievable. Is a day they pick up. It's a day wasted of that 6 plus or minus months a year you can actually pass legislation. There's only so much Trump can do with executive orders. And most of his executive orders, which of course the left's been pissing and moaning about, are really orders undoing Obama's illegal and unconstitutional orders. He hasn't done a whole bunch of new orders. Yes, regulations for sure. And yes, the edict to get a 30-day plan to destroy ISIS. I mean, there have been some. But most of them have been undoing Obama's deal. And by the way, that also factors in to the dots that I'm going to put on this radio show page for you. And then connect them with my opinion. You can connect them with yours. I have a lot of faith in the brains of the hundreds of thousands of people who listen to me. You guys rock. You are the, and I say this with love, the irredeemable, deplorable, Bubba's, bitter clingers that make this country great. And you are the only reason this country is still great. And you are likely the only reason this country might be made, quote unquote, great again. All right. So, the Dems know that delay will slow the entire legislative process. Obamacare, taxes, even military, even education. Because the Democrats don't care about you. And they don't care about blacks. And they don't care about America. And they don't care about anything but their money, their power, their ideology, and the extent of control that they exercise over what happens in the country as a whole, and in fact, what happens in your house. Trust me on that. If you don't believe me that they don't care, all you have to do is watch Trump's speech. Which, by the way, you should do anyway, or at least read the transcript. And you've heard about some of this on the mainstream media, but I'm going to I'm going to give you some specific points right now. And it's all dots. It's all ties into where I'm going with this. So the Dems went to this speech expecting a tirade and the press and the inauguration, how many people were at the inauguration, you know, all the nonsense. And instead, Trump surprised the hell out of them. But even when Trump talked pure Americana, and I don't mean left or right, I mean it's pure Americana, they didn't clap. They didn't stand. They looked dour. Because they aren't concerned with how well this country does. They aren't concerned with Donald Trump's policies and legislation, even if it's good for Americans, and even if in their heart of hearts they agree with it. That's not what they care about. They care about those matters I told you about a minute ago. And to get those matters back, so to speak, to get the government, the deep state, back under their control, although the deep state kind of has a life of its own, they have to get rid of Trump. They have to get rid of the Republicans. They have to return to power. You got to start with that precept. In Trump's speech, I actually watched it three times, and I did it not to listen to Trump three times. I listened to watch the reaction of the Democrats to specific points in Trump's speech. These are just some of the key points in his speech that Democrats did not clap, other than a few who are worried about losing their seats. You know, Joe Manchin and the guy from Indiana and the one gal, I forget, oh, from North Dakota, right. Right. Thank you, producer. Appreciate that. He said he is going to save Americans' health care, and that Americans would be able to choose the plan they want. Now, the Democrats may disagree on Obamacare and all that kind of stuff, but their constituents being able to choose the plan that they choose, that they want, you can't clap for that. You have to look dour on that. Really? Here's another one for you. He said, in Medicaid, there'll be no one left out. Now, the constituency of the Democrats, supposedly, is the poor and the minorities and, you know, all these groups that they stitch together into their voting coalition. The blacks and the Asians and the Hispanics and you name it. All the special groups that they don't care about. Now, whatever you may think of Obamacare, Medicaid is Medicaid. I've talked about on previous shows Obamacare. 4 years ago, I was beating the drums on Obamacare. A bunch of national interviews, some of them with Obama administration officials. Just put Obamacare in the search bar. You probably get 4 pages of shows. You can pick the one you like by title, or you can listen to the interviews. No matter what you think of Obamacare, of the 20 million people, and I talked about this, I think, 2 shows ago, that are supposedly, who knows, enrolled under quote-unquote Obamacare, 11 million, give or take, could have gotten Medicaid without Obamacare. I mean, they didn't have to go through some intermediary and get rocked and socked. They could have gotten Medicaid on their own. Medicaid is the safety net of healthcare. And yes, it has lots of limitations. And there's lots of docs, and increasing with the government regulations which limits reimbursements, who won't take Medicaid. But it's there. And it gives coverage. And it's a hell of a lot better, even if it's not perfect, than having no coverage. I mean, umpty-ump exponentially better. How could you sit there when the President of the United States, whoever he or she may be, and says Medicaid will remain and no one will be left out? You don't clap for that? That's directed right at your constituency. The only reason you don't clap for that, folks, is because you don't care. Or should we say it's not what you care about? We'll get into what they care about here in a moment. Then he talked about insurance across state lines. Now, the Democrats have railed and railed and railed for years about the rich insurance companies and how they screwed it up and how they've taken advantage of people. How Obamacare, you know, controlled them and all this kind of stuff. Now, the President of the United States says, let me paraphrase it for you. I'm going to hurt the insurance companies because I'm going to create a competitive market where any insurance company can sell in any state rather than the extreme limitations right now, state by state, on which insurers can work. You don't clap for that? You don't clap on something that's going to hurt those nasty insurance companies that you hate? That's going to lower the cost for your constituents, regardless of what happens to Obamacare. You don't clap for that, huh? You don't clap for that because it's not what you care about. Then, he had a couple of catch-all phrases. Quote, join forces to help hurting Americans. I mean, asking them for some bipartisanship to help those in our country who are hurting. Financially, spiritually, in terms of their health. I mean, this is to all Americans, not just the quote-unquote Democratic constituency. And you don't clap for that? Not if it's not what you care about. Clean water, clean air. How many times have you heard the Democrats use clean water, clean air? How many times have you heard the Democrats piss and moan about the fact that Republicans want dirty air and dirty water and they don't care and they're going to run the earth right into an iceberg and we're all going to die? But when the President of the United States stands up and says we need to work together for clean air and clean water, you can't even move your two hands together and clap twice? Not if it's not what you care about. And by the way, I don't want to hurt the entire 100 and 200, whatever it is, Democrats in the Senate and the House. So I will tell you that I counted five Democrats who actually stood and clapped on those particular words. Five. We're going to rebuild our military. Now, there can be lots of arguments over how. There can be lots of arguments over how much. There can be lots of arguments over the dollars. But I don't think any American who's concerned about the real security of this country, and therefore the real security of their constituents, could sit in their seat looking dour and not clap at least once. Like, you know, one time, get the energy to raise your two hands and pound them together palm to palm. Not once. Once again, those same five Democrats who are worried about losing their seats stood up and clapped. None of the others did. Then he had his great, I love this line of his, by the way, that he is not here to represent the world. He is here to represent the United States. One Democrat clapped. That's Joe Manchin from West Virginia, who knows his political life is in peril. The state went to Trump by 40-plus points. So, I think we can safely establish that whatever the Democrats, the progressives, care about, It is not the country. It is not the financials of their constituents. It is not the health of their constituents. And it is not the security of their constituents. It's not even the air and the water their constituents breathe and drink. They don't care. Which kind of brings us to, what do they care about? What they care about, folks, is regaining control of the apparatus of government. In Barack Obama's case, we're going to bring Barry into the fold here. He cares about his personal legacy. America be damned. Barry wants his place in the sun to always shine. Narcissistic sedition. Which reminds me, as a quick aside, On the Right Side Radio is now on Twitter. I finally broke down. And it is at On the Right Side. And please, come follow us. We already have some heavy hitters following us, and we've only been up about 4 or 5 days. We'll have more information, by the way, on the On the Right Side website. That is www.ontherightsideradio.com. Over the next week, you will see some changes to that website. I haven't had that done for a couple years, but with all the new listeners we have around the country, and in fact some emails from other countries, it's time. And I know a lot of you are frustrated because you haven't been able to figure out how to listen to this on your phones. We will have instructions on how to listen to On the Right Side Radio on your phones. So that should help out a bunch, because like you, I am technically challenged. I couldn't do it myself until it was explained to me by the technical folks who are doing the work on the website. We're going to have a feature where you will be able to click on last week's show, the weeks before show, and the weeks before show. In other words, the last 4 shows, in addition to the archives, it'll make it much easier to find. I know a lot of folks, particularly my podcast listeners, listen to shows when it's convenient for them. Sometimes they listen to them 1 or 2 or 3 at a time. So that will make it much easier. You will see a number of great changes on the website. And in addition, our Twitter will be posted. You can click right there and go follow us. Which reminds me, throw some likes at our Facebook page, folks. I mean, with all the listeners that we have around the country, I only have 300 and... Yes, producer. I have 337, is it? 337 likes on the On the Right Side Radio page. Now, come on. With hundreds of thousands of folks, I think I can probably get to 338. Throw a like at the Facebook page. Follow us on Twitter. Watch the website for changes over the next week. You'll really like them. Let's go back to the reality of today. We know what the Democrats, what they don't care about. What they do care about, we've also identified. They want their power back. They want to be in charge of the government before it's dismantled by Trump. It is a foot race, folks. Who can get to the finish line first? Can Trump get there? Can he get his major legislation passed and his dismantling of the government done before the Democrats get there and stop him? And understand that the Democrats, after listening to that speech, and after seeing the polls afterwards, and after realizing that they really have not been able to phase this guy, no matter what they've thrown at him, are operating on a much bigger game plan. Much, much, much bigger. The delays of cabinet appointees and other folks that the Senate has to approve, 500, by the way. As of yesterday, there were 500, give or take one or two, positions that the Senate has to approve for the Trump government to be fully operational. 500. At this time in Obama's presidency, there were, and the reports are different, but the report I'm going to go with is 38. At this time in Obama's presidency, all but one of his cabinet picks have been cemented. Trump had two, I think, or maybe three done this week, and there's still four or five outstanding. This is cabinet, folks. Now, if the Democrats can not only pick up days, if they can not only pick up days on this by delay, you know, that foot race that's going on, that compressed time frame for Trump to really get stuff done, to dismantle the Democratic machine. The other thing they accomplished by slowing down all these appointments is they don't get people in position, Trump people, in position to start firing those folks who are holdover from Obama, the shadow government I've talked to you about. Once again, type shadow government into the search bar. Listen to those shows back then. Now the shadow government is like on everybody's lips. I don't think I was the first to coin the term, but I was the first to really talk about it. And it was a long time ago. I mean, it was clear, just connecting the dots back then, what Obama was doing. And you got to understand, Obama is brilliant. Brilliant. Do I respect him? I respect his brilliance, his planning, his cunning. But no, I don't respect him at all. I don't respect him as a man. I don't respect his ideology or his ideals. His narcissism disgusts me. And his anti-American, pro-Muslim, anti-Israel, anti-Constitution, anti-individual, egocentric acts and lack of acts make me puke. Many of them, I might add, treason. Flat out, treason. He's worried about, or they, but it's actually him. They're worried about Russia? Really? Think about what Russia, think about the rampage Russia went on under Barry's reign, and Barry did nothing. I mean, this is all so contrived. Did you notice that immediately after the Trump speech, all of a sudden, the Dems and all their media allies were talking about Russia again? And then, of course, today, or yesterday, excuse me, the day of Trump's big speech on the aircraft carrier, we have the Jeff Sessions bomb. Now, let me give you an example of what I'm telling you. To keep the shadow government, if they keep the shadow government in place, every day is kept in place, undermines Trump's administration. Because the shadow government people just don't do something when they're asked to do it. They just don't move the paper from their desk to wherever it's supposed to go. They leak information on purpose. And by the way, the leaks are timed to interfere with news about Trump. The brouhaha that erupted over Sessions was to take away the punch of Trump's speech. And Americans' acceptance of that speech and acceptance of the concepts. I gave you one poll. There are many. And let me give you a specific example. So Jeff Sessions, his confirmation was delayed 3+ weeks. No excuse for it. Because his confirmation was delayed, his assistant deputy attorney generals are not in place. The first one is supposed to be voted on next week. They've been delaying that too. So who's Who's in place for assistant deputy attorney generals at the Justice Department? Guess what? Obama appointees, the shadow government. The brouhaha over Sessions, whatever, with the Russian ambassador, who cares, which forced him to recuse himself, means that the baton for screwing around with the Trump administration, with investigations, which once again slow down legislation, they distract, that baton has now been passed to a deputy assistant attorney general who is an Obama appointee. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them appoint a special prosecutor. These are the same appointees who didn't appoint special prosecutors, of course, for Hillary or Lois Lerner or Kucinich. I probably pronounced his name wrong. I always do. Maybe I have a mental block against the guy. The head of the IRS. Or Eric Holder, when he was caught in actual perjury and censured by the Congress, which meant nothing because Republicans didn't have the cojones to follow through on it. These are the same folks who didn't prosecute those. These are the same folks who went down and screwed, rightly or wrongly, exercised control over local police jurisdictions in racial hatred cases, which turned out to be not racial hatred cases. You know, Ferguson and Chicago and Baltimore. These same people are now, until Sessions can get his new people in, and I don't know what the mechanical workings are in the DOJ. I don't know whether he can say, you're fired, you're hired, or this is no longer your desk and everything that's on it stays with the new guy. I don't know how that works. And I've researched it. I'm not sure how it works. I think it's kind of up to the Department of Justice. And a special prosecutor, folks, special prosecutors don't hone in on one thing. They're all across the board. The special prosecutor that was appointed in the Whitewater case back during the Clinton days. Google up my, I did three shows on the 47 one-time friends of Bill and Hillary Clinton who mysteriously died. Eight of them in plane accidents. What are the odds of all 47 of those people getting offed to begin with? And tell me what the astronomical odds are of eight of them dying in rare, plane crashes are rare, eight of them dying in some kind of plane mishap. And it wasn't all at once. I mean, these are eight separate instances. But the special prosecutor that was appointed to investigate Whitewater, which was a land deal, I'm not going to go into it right now, back there in Arkansas in the day, because they turned over rocks and they have pretty much unlimited authority, which is why they're called a special prosecutor, that led to the Monica Lewinsky thing, Bill Clinton's impeachment, his loss of his law license, etc. That's what happens with a special prosecutor. And it ties up an administration. The discovery and the hearings and the testimony and the whole nine yards. Every minute that a person in the administration, in any administration, spends dealing with that crap, they're not passing legislation, they're not dismantling the shadow government, they're not undoing Barry's legacy. And with every day they get something done, understand this, the Democrats are thrown back that much further in what they really care about, which is retaking control so that they can increase their power and their money. That is what the deep state is all about, and the Democrats are lockstep with the deep state. They're also lockstep with radical Islam, and the deep state, I think, is too, at least some of it. So, politics, power, ideology over the health, safety, welfare, and freedoms of America and Americans. That is what we have going. And they're doing it at the grassroots level through the disruption, the organized disruption of these town halls. Have you seen any of those? With the nicely printed signs that all match that everybody bobs up and down. Did you know George Soros actually printed a pamphlet of what to say and how to disrupt a town hall meeting that gets distributed? Did you notice the story on Sessions broke, I think it was Wednesday morning. Within an hour, there was a huge crowd of protesters with nicely printed signs, most of them, not all, in front of the Department of Justice demanding his resignation. And within an hour after that, Chuck Schumer comes out and demands his resignation. And within a half an hour of that, Nancy Pelosi comes out and demands his resignation. I mean, totally orchestrated. They knew they were going to dump that piece of information. They had planned for it. They knew exactly what they were doing. Completely orchestrated. Orchestrated in the talking points of Democratic congressmen and senators and Democratic shills. In the grassroots, wrong terminology, in the organized protests outside the Department of Justice in 1 hour. 1 hour! And the crowd was assembled with signs. Right. This is organized. It's concerted. It has a point. It has a goal. It's even orchestrated with the press. You know, I listened to CNN and BBC after Trump's speech. And they grudgingly admitted, with a few exceptions, that the speech was good. And then they went on to talk about what he said in the speech. And listen, you got to remember, I listened to the speech three times so that I could see where the Democrats were clapping and where they weren't. And by the way, they hardly clapped at all. I could have given you another 20 examples. You're familiar with, that poor gal who lost her husband, Ryan Owens, and the incredible nonsense that came from the left in the several days thereafter. I mean, she's delusional, and she got used, and she's a pawn, and she's a puppet, and Trump is a political monster. And, you know, he's a showman, and I think Michael Moore said, the most applause for a dead shoulder, he's going to win an Emmy. I'm paraphrasing. The most applause for a dead soldier, though, that's a quote. I mean, who does that? Unless you have a deep and abiding disrespect and dislike for America, what she stands for, America's military, you name it. Because what you care about overshadows all of that. I can give you a whole bunch of examples of how this has been organized. You know, the day after Trump's speech, the media was immediately talking about, and BBC and CNN was talking about immediately after the speech, I'm talking about an hour or two, the Russia thing. The Russia thing. Now go back a few months. Who was talking about the Russia thing? Oh, the Hillary Clinton campaign. Who was jumping up and down about the Russia thing? Oh, yeah, Barack Obama. In my shows after the election, you can listen to each one if you haven't. Each week, I gave you a rundown of what Obama had done. Remember, he looked everybody in the eye, and he looked Trump in the eye and said, I'm going to make this a smooth transition, peaceful transfer of power, all the crap. In the meantime, he was putting his plan in motion. He knew he had his shadow government because he had carefully set it up for 8 years. He knew that. He knew that the manufactured Russian crap had struck a chord with many people in America. He knew what the intelligence was. I mean, Barack Obama and his shadow government knew about the Flynn stuff. They knew about the Sessions stuff. They knew all this way in advance, folks. Way back when they started jumping up and down about Russia to deflect wherever the information came from. Russia, WikiLeaks, the man on the moon. The content of the information that was so damning to both the Democrats and to Hillary. Barry's chosen successor to keep his sun shining. And if you remember, this was several weeks ago, in my segment on what Barry was doing that week, and I just picked the major points, to undermine the incoming administration, I told you about him changing some of the, espionage rules, the classified information rules. So instead of classified information being highly limited and highly restricted to just a few agencies, CIA, DIN, FBI, instead, he broadened how many people could get their hands on it. 16 agencies and departments were then privy. This was, I believe, December 27th. Were then privy to all this classified information. We learned yesterday and the day before, Thursday, through various news reports, that the Obama staff took the Russian intelligence information. Who talked to whom and blah, 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 the whole nine yards, and distributed it out to everybody. Bits and pieces here, there, and everywhere. One of the things that Barry Obama did, I didn't talk about this in the previous shows, but he declared right before he changed the espionage rules and right before, after changing the espionage rules, he took this classified information and it went out to hundreds of people rather than a dozen. He changed to give himself the legal authority to do that. He declared in an executive order that national elections are critical infrastructure of the United States. When a president designates something as critical infrastructure, he has far more latitude to act to, quote-unquote, protect it. So the timeline here is several months before Hillary's defeat, out comes the Russian deal. Barack Obama dutifully thumps the drum on it. The election comes along. Before the election, before election night is over, remember, Michigan hadn't even finished counting its votes. Several other states hadn't either. Barack Obama is telling Hillary to concede. In fact, the back channels say they had quite an argument over it because she didn't want to. Put that aside. I have no corroboration of that. We do know, and you can Google it up, that Barry asked Hillary to concede before the election was, quote-unquote, over. It was tilting heavily toward Trump, but it wasn't over. Now, anybody who hates to lose, and Barry hates to lose, doesn't lose so easily or so gracefully. Unless they're not losing. Unless they have a game plan that they think will result in their eventual win. Let's continue with the timeline. Leading up to Christmas, he declares very quietly, nobody heard about it, you probably have never heard this before, but he declares national elections to be critical infrastructure, giving himself wide latitude to protect this newly found critical infrastructure. A short time later, he changes the spy rules, the confidential information rules, so that hundreds of people can get their hands on classified documents of certain natures and types, not just a few. Then, right after January 1, his staff gathers all the espionage, if you will, all the classified information on the Russians, or should we say, all the classified information on the Russians that pertain to Trump in any way, shape, slice, or form, or that could be painted as by fake news as to implicate Trump. And using what he had done in the weeks prior, distributes out this information to all those newly found guardians of our national secret, the hundreds out there in 16 departments and agencies, to his shadow government. He armed the shadow government with bullets of information. The hell with the security of America. The hell with giving away methods and operations. The hell with alerting the Russians to how we intercept their stuff. Might be a tricky thing in a nuclear war. The hell with all that. I mean, only one thing matters. It's that what? Money, power, control, ideology. Everything else is second to that. And in Barry's case, keeping his sun shining. So now this information is out there. Nobody knows it's out there until literally yesterday and the day before. Literally, yesterday and the day before the show. It was discovered. So all this stuff is out there, and then, like a time capsule, it gets released. It gets released at the most inopportune times for Trump. The day after his great speech that 70 to 80% of Americans liked, and the polls like the one I gave you at the beginning of the show coming out, and the Democrats looking like morons not clapping over stuff that had to do with their constituents. I mean, they didn't even clap. Well, some of them did. There was a sparse smattering of clapping Democrats at infrastructure, something that they've wanted for 8 years. And with all this information out there, it gets dribbled out at exactly the right moments. Exactly. The Sessions dribble, I don't agree with it whatsoever. I think it's all nonsense. It's all distraction. It all goes back to the Russian deal. It gets everybody's mind off the felonies that are being committed by leaking this classified information in the brouhaha, which is exacerbated by a messy mainstream media, corrupt outfits that they are, stirring the pot. You know, it's like stirring a pot with no ladle. Or actually stirring a pot with a ladle, but there's nothing in the pot. That's fake news. And then Sessions, of course, has to recuse himself. I mean, he really didn't have a choice the way this all came down. And now power over investigations of the Trump government are going to be in the hands of, we hope for a very limited time, the shadow government, Obama appointees. We already know what one of them did. Remember Katie, baby? At the Department of Justice, she waits till Trump issues his immigration orders and then gets up there and with laughing says she's not going to defend them. This is the same gal who called the White House and told them about the Flynn deal because she had listened to the Flynn conversation. Guess what? That was part of the expansion that Obama did. She was one of the recipients of this classified information. There's no higher classified information other than top secret and for your eyes only than intercepted communications, particularly of an American citizen. You've heard all this on mainstream media. I'm not going to go into the details with you. But she listened and she leaked And she called the White House, and she set them up until she was fired. But there's like seven more of her at the Department of Justice. And none of Trump's people threw Sessions in because of the delays that have been going on simultaneously with the leaks over in the Senate. Are you trying to get a picture of this? This is not happenstance. This is not isolated things. This is a concerted effort under a well-organized, carefully thought out, premeditated, long planned course of action by the progressives. In a matter of weeks, Barry was able to open 250 Organizing for America offices I talked about on previous shows. Now look, you may be the world's greatest community organizer, but starting from scratch, there's no way that in 2 weeks you can open up 250 offices across the United States. No way. So that was another thing planned way in advance. Through these Organizing for America offices, you see the spectacle, which the media exacerbates, of these town halls and protests and March of the Angry Vaginas and the whole friggin' nine yards, with their carefully pre-printed signs, holding their pamphlets from George Soros on what to say and how to disrupt. Folks, this doesn't happen overnight. And there has to be money behind it. We know where the money comes from. It comes from Soros organizations and other left-wing groups. But he's the primary donor. But where did the organization come from? The Democratic Party, do you think? Every one of these operatives, every one of these shadow government people are brilliant, can think for themselves, know exactly when to release a tidbit of information that throws everybody in a tizzy and wastes more of that precious time in the foot race. You hear the mainstream media talking about these outrageous town halls and how the demonstrators are there with no agenda, just to disrupt. Well, I don't know if the demonstrators know they have an agenda or not, but the folks who are directing them have an agenda. Stall, delay, and hinder to win the foot race. And I'll tell you where the foot race leads here as we get further into the show, because it's chilling. And I think you'll agree with me. I think I have it right. You know, there was another thing. There was another thing that the Democrats didn't clap at, other than those three senators, when he said radical Islamic terror. Just three Democratic senators clapped. None of the other Democrats. And that will tell you and add foundation to that whole concept of the radical left, or just the left, and radical Islam forming a union, which I warned about years ago, and which just this week those two articles came out on. And the radical Islamists are part of this agenda. They're part of this demonstrated, this orchestration of how to slow down the opponent in the foot race and speed up yourself. Because what's at stake, folks, what's at stake is the fate of the republic. And I don't mean, you know, we talked about this prior to the election. Yes, that was the first step in trying to restore the republic, to get our guys in. But let me tell you, and I have said this for several shows, this battle has just started. And we are up against a sinister, brilliant, well-financed outfit that is chilling in its ability to plan in advance. The progressives take no steps that don't have an agenda. They cross no hash marks without focus on a distant goal line. And where that goal line is, I think I've figured it out, is scary. And you know, most of the deplorables have kind of gone back to sleep. Yeah, we're watching more than usual. Folks, you got to get involved. Because part of this organization that was formed before the election and planned before the election and is being implemented now is to take back control from under our noses of local, county, and state governments. Did you know that in Delaware this past week, they have 21 folks in their Senate? It was 11 Republicans and 10 Democrats. We lost that election. Not by much, but we lost that election. The Delaware State Senate is now democratically controlled 11-10 rather than Republican controlled 11-10. That's just the beginning. We have a special election coming up in Georgia to fill Tom Price's seat. They got kind of a movie star type model guy running for the Democrats, and they've poured $2 million into a congressional seat. I mean, not only would it be great PR, and they would use it to say Trump isn't getting anything done, because they have realized that Trump's power comes from keeping his promises. That's why the speech to Congress was so alarming to them. That's why these polls are so alarming to them. That's why the drumbeat on Russia. That's why the orchestrated dribble of information. Do you really think that these hundreds of high-level shadow government people and these 16 newly bestowed powers of confidential information spread out over 16 agencies and departments, you really think that they talk on the phone and go, you release such and such tomorrow, and I'll release so and so the next day? No, they don't. It's all being orchestrated from a higher point. It's like a ballet of subterfuge. A dance of subversion. A symphony of sedition. And it is planned and run by Barack Hussein Obama. And has been from the get-go. I told you several weeks ago that he was behind this, and now the proof is beginning to emerge. Eric Holder had a press conference this week and gleefully announced that Obama was coming back in to help with state redistricting. This is their attack at the local level to take back control of the House. And on several other points, Eric Holder. Eric Holder, who couldn't spell the words rule of law, neither could Loretta Lynch. But Jeff Sessions is pounded because he met with a Russian ambassador. Okay. Unbelievable. Jeff Sessions should resign, but Eric Holder, who was held in contempt of Congress and lied. I mean, flat lied. Fast and Furious and the AP Fox News scandals. He said he had nothing to do with it, and wow, what was at the bottom of the warrant under which they took all of Jim Rosen's documents and stuff out of his parents' houses? Ah, Eric Holder's signature. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, poor Eric. Such a short-term memory loss. Maybe we ought to send him a bottle of Prevagen. Barry Obama is behind this. It's being financed primarily by George Soros. It's a plan they've had in place for a long time. The Russian thing was pre-planned, orchestrated, created. I wouldn't doubt that it wasn't planned, orchestrated, created, and maintained in clandestine meetings and communications with an all-too-willing corrupt press. In fact, I'd be shocked if there had been communications on it. You know, the same press that fed debate questions to Hillary Clinton prior to debates. Oh, yes. That's what we're up against. And they're being aided by people on the right. John McCain. John McCain is a globalist. Great on him for his service and thank you. Great on him for his 5 years in captivity and the injuries he sustained. Thank you. Great on him for his medals. But John McCain is now one of them. You know what came out in this last week, too? Hardly ever covered by the mainstream media. And you know why? Because John McCain is one of them. If this had come out about Trump, it would have been front page headlines ever. Everywhere. So, John McCain, globalist, America second. Did you know John McCain has a foundation? It actually is a mirror of Clinton's foundation. Has a staff of 80 people. 80 folks. He gets money from the Middle East, including million-dollar donations from the House of Saud, Saudi Arabia. The Rothschild dynasty, huge globalists. Michael Bloomberg, another huge globalist. And it's called the McCain Institute. Google it up. He started it, by the way, with the excess funds from his 2008 campaign. Makes you wonder. You know, if he had won the presidency, he couldn't have started it. Just saying. So using those excess campaign contributions and foreign donations, gee, does this sound like Hillary Clinton or what? His stated mission for the McCain Foundation is, quote, the fight against human trafficking. Ah. Well, let's see. We know he has millions and millions and millions of dollars that came in. I don't have an exact figure for you. Do you know what his foundation spent on this cause that the foundation was formed for? $500,000. That's it. That's what's been spent on the charity. It's the Clinton model. Bring in $100 million and spend $10 million on the charity and use $90 million for other stuff, including your own pockets. So Donald Trump, you wonder why McCain's against Donald Trump? Donald Trump is against globalism. That goes right to John McCain's pocketbook. Kind of explains why he's in with the deep state, shall we say, with the Never Trumpers, with the let's keep things as they are, not tear it down crowd. Another article that came out this week. This goes back to Barry Obama orchestrating this stuff. This was in the DC Clothesline, which, by the way, is a relatively obscure but excellent publication if you want to subscribe to it on the web. Their quote is airing out America's dirty laundry. It's quite good. So, did you know that Obama is being aided in his orchestration, his command of the insurgency, the anti-American insurgency that's going on right now? By, guess who? His ex-senior advisor, Valerie Jarrett. You know, good old Valerie, the Iran deal, born in Tehran, Iran. Oh, wait a minute. Muslim, you mean another tie between radical Islam and the extreme left? My, what a coincidence. There's a reason that he bought his house in Washington, D.C. And I think if you remember, he bought his house prior to the election. I'm not so sure he wouldn't have pulled some of this with Hillary. I'm not so sure he didn't have stuff on Hillary that he knew he'd have her on. He knew that she would be under his control. And to the extent she wasn't, he had a shadow government in place. This is all part of a plan, folks. All part of a plan. One of his family members leaked some stuff inadvertently this past week. Quote, Obama has come to be energized to rise up against the policies he loathes and the presidency which is illegitimate. Unquote. The same family source, by the way, let slip that Obama's goal is to get rid of Trump by resignation or impeachment. And that he's dismayed, I'm quoting, the word dismayed is in the article, dismayed by how rapidly Trump is tearing down Obama's legacy, Obamacare, regulations, the EPA, the weakening of the military, I mean, the whole nine yards, radical Islam. So that is what's going on, folks. And the source also told the DC Clothesline that one of the key tools that they had planned to use all along that they were employing now to undermine Trump's presidency and to get the impeachment or resignation and to stop the dismantling of the shadow government in the deep state was by, quote, spreading information about Russian efforts to undermine the presidential election and about possible contacts between associates of President-elect Donald J. Trump and the Russians. Huh. Wow. And let's see, when did that come out? Oh, the day before the Sessions deal. I would say that that kind of corroborates this article. Wouldn't you? You bet it does, folks. You bet it does. All right. Radical Islam is playing a part in this, too. The Muslim Brotherhood just announced a $5 million ad buy to tell us how bad Trump is and how wonderful Muslims are. And you're going to start seeing those ads shortly. So you're getting it on all fronts now. Some of the members of Obama's shadow government, you can type in czars, you can type in Muslim Brotherhood, you can type in Muslims in government. In the search bar, listen to my previous shows on this. And by previous, I mean I was jumping up and down about this years ago. But his Muslim Brotherhood buddy Plants, obviously no longer in the White House, but spread out over the agencies, including the intelligence agencies, and including John Brennan from the CIA, who I think is probably the one who's orchestrating the leaks under Obama's direction. Treason. Radical Islam is in the mix, but all being directed by Barry and crew. Barry, Valerie, and Eric, baby. Anyway, this article in WND, I believe it's posted down below. Oh, yeah, my producer's reminding me. I forgot to tell you, on these special elections, if you go to the politics section down below, you'll see several requests for donations on these politics, on these upcoming special elections. The one in Georgia, we blew it on the one in Delaware, obviously. The one in Georgia, key. I mean, every House seat is key based on what the Democrats have planned, folks. Trust me. Every Senate, every seat in every government jurisdiction around the country is key if we are going to defeat, if we are going to win this battle to restore the Republic. Otherwise, the election of Donald Trump is going to mean squat. We won the battle and we will lose the war unless we stay engaged. Go to the politics section down below, or if you guys are on AM, go to my website, the On the Right Side Radio website, ontherightsideradio.com. Go to politics. There's several different outfits there you can contribute to. Hey, chip in $10, $20, $30, $50. This is cheap money. $10 is two Starbucks, and I don't recommend you buy coffee from them anyway. We've talked about that. It's a movie ticket. What's more important to you? You and your family and your country, or a movie ticket? Get involved. Send this link out. Join us at Twitter. Join us at Facebook. Send this link out to 20 people. If you don't like this show, send out somebody else's show. Do something. Don't sit on the couch rubbing your back, congratulating yourself that Donald Trump got elected. I'm telling you, the battle has just started. It's going to get really, really, really ugly. You think this campaign was ugly? You ain't seen nothing yet. Because the soul of America is up for grabs. And our enemies aren't screwing around. And they don't care who they hurt, who they step on, who loses, including you and your family, so they can get what they want. And if you don't believe me, you watch that speech and keep your eyes on the Democratic side of the aisle. If you didn't believe it before, you'll believe it then. So, anyway, a guy by the name of Homan wrote this article. That's Hohmann. Great article. He has a book out, too. Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest Through Immigration and the Resettlement Jihad. If you go back to my past shows, type in Muslim Brotherhood, you'll see that I talk about a white paper that was discovered in a New Jersey raid by the FBI way back in the early 2000s, which basically it puts in writing. It's like the Mein Kampf of radical Islam. How they're going to take over America from within. Remember, the Democratic Party almost elected, I talked about it last show, Keith Ellison, who is not only a Muslim, he's a radical jihadist under the cloak of a to-the-right moderate Muslim, whose trips to Saudi Arabia were financed by an arm of the Muslim Brotherhood to the tune of $13,000, where he met with the Arabian bank that pays salaries to the families of suicide bombers, and the sheik who issued a fatwa on American soldiers. He almost got elected DNC chairman. Instead, they elected Tom Perez, the labor secretary under Obama. So we got shadow government going on and shadow party going on. Another Obama guy. And the DNC didn't orchestrate this, folks. No, not at all. The DNC was in total, they're still in total disarray. They didn't even have a party chairman. They had a bitterly contested race with a bunch of people running and Perez and Ellison slugging it out. So you know this coordination didn't come from them. It didn't come from imams in radical Islam. They contributed, but it didn't come from them. It came from somebody who knows how to organize, who knows who to call, who has the contacts and the power, There's only one man in the world that could have thought up this plan, put it in motion way in advance, and now executes it perfectly. And that is Barack Hussein Obama. And of course, he can not only help his leftist friends, he can help his Muslim friends. And he can keep his place in the sun. He kills three birds with one stone. What's not to like? All right. The bottom line of all this. Oh, yeah. I forgot one quote. You know, the radical Islam and left deal. So after Trump used the words radical Islamic jihad, Ben Rhodes, another Obama guy, remember him, the Benghazi video guy, the Iran nuclear deal guy, who lied through his teeth and admitted in a public interview just, 6 months ago to the American public about all this stuff. Second to Susan Rice, the so-called national security advisor, gag me. Another Obama gal. What Ben Rhodes tweeted out was, quote, "What is accomplished by declaring war on radical Islamic terrorists?" Really? That was his tweet after Trump's speech? I'll read this to you again. What is accomplished by declaring war on radical Islamist terrorists? Does that kind of tell you where the heart and soul of the Obama crew is? Where the heart and soul of the left is, the alt-left? Who, make no mistake about it, folks, they are complete control of the Democratic machinery. Complete control. And they are, right now, in significant control of the United States government through the shadow government he set up. Now, I think Trump's people know this. I think they're smart and they're tough. And I think they'll get them weeded out if they win the foot race. Because if they don't win the foot race, here's what's going to happen. And this is what the Democrats are hoping for. Number one, here's a Democratic plan. Broad brush. Hinder, delay, stall, and distract at every level. The local level town halls, in the Senate on confirmations, through the shadow government, with the leaks, you name it. Every tactic they can use, no matter how stupid they look. They don't care about looking stupid. Do you understand? They only care about the goal line. And if they can accomplish their plan, it doesn't really matter what you and I think of them. And they don't care. Schumer and Pelosi are puppets of what's going on. They're just mouthpieces out there. Everything they do is instructed. Everything any of these Democrats are doing is instructed. Everything is a plan. Every day they can delay Trump progress, they gain a day in the foot race. The hell with the American people. The hell with you and I paying lower taxes. The hell with you and I having a job. The hell with you and I paying lower health insurance premiums. The hell with you and I paying less for drugs. By the way, that was another thing the Democrats didn't clap for. They've been screaming about Big Pharma forever, but Trump's going to pound Big Pharma. Nope. I think about 20 of them clapped. Number two. Pound on one hand, delay so nothing gets done. Number two, pound on the fact nothing's being done. How many times over the last week, if you don't think this is a plan, have you heard, well, he hasn't gotten anything done. Well, he's only done executive orders. Well, he hasn't passed any legislation. Well, he hasn't made his appointments. I mean, he's made his appointments. They haven't passed them. This is Orwellian, Saul Alinsky stuff. that they're pulling on your mind or trying to pull on your mind. And unfortunately, successfully pulling on many people's minds. In 40 days, there's only been 7 cabinet positions filled. 2 more this week. 9 now. 9. Wow. Out of 14. Understand, this is number 3, they are vested in failure. The alt-left, the progressives, which are the Democratic Party, cannot win unless Trump and America fails. Their winning is predicated on failure. Never let a crisis go to waste. Remember that? Another dot for you. Their success is rooted in continuing crime, carnage, disarray, social upheaval, poor education, inner city blight, higher taxes, bloated government, terror. I've said this for a long time. You really think Barry felt badly about these terror attacks? Okay. The refugee crisis. The dilution of American values, language, and culture through open borders. They are vested in those failures because they cannot win without them. And if Trump wins the foot race, they won't have those failures. That's why they're pulling out the stops to make sure he doesn't and they do at every level of government. There's a reason that Barack Obama is helping Eric Holder with the redistricting plan to get control of the House. It is not really the Dems versus the Republicans. It's not really the conservatives versus the liberals. It is not really the Democrats or liberals against Donald Trump. It's really the Democrats against America. Fourth thing, they know the key to not getting their butts handed to them, maybe taking control back of the Senate, and if not taking control of the House, paring down the slight, it's rather marginal, Republican control of the House in 2018, is to make sure Trump cannot fulfill his promises. Remember that poll I gave you at the beginning of the show? It is not good for them that a huge majority of Americans think Trump is getting things done. They need to be where a huge majority of Americans don't think Trump is getting things done. Never mind the fact that the reason he's not is their plan, which you are seeing played out in front of you every day now. Every day, in all sorts of ways. Sessions, just the latest thing. There'll be many more. Number 5. If they can get a House majority or a Senate majority, then they can totally shut down Trump stuff. Totally shut it down. In which case, they have won the foot race. That is why they're pulling out all the stops, no matter how maniacal, how crazy they seem to be. Because they don't care. They're focused on one thing, getting back control of one or both of the congressional chambers and several state houses over the next 2 years. That is their focus. That is absolutely their focus. Now, let me tell you, there's another landmine that Obama laid out there. And let me tell you, the date was on purpose. It was kind of his, he thought he'd win, or Hillary would win, which means he won. But, you know, a good general always has a backup plan. And he and Boehner put together this continuing resolution on the debt ceiling. I call it Boehner's boner. And we're not talking about a body part. I mean, Boehner couldn't hold a candle. Couldn't hold a candle to Barack Obama's intellect or ability to plan. The $20 trillion debt ceiling, folks, comes up March 15th. March 15th. Obama knew damn well that that date would be right at the end of the first 100 days of whatever new president there was. And if a Republican could be used by the Democrats to create all sorts of havoc. When March 15th comes, that's, you know, a little bit more than a week from now, the United States Treasury will no longer be able to borrow money. They will have about $200 billion, give or take, left in the bank, so to speak. They're burning money at $75 billion a month. Do the math. And what could further derail Trump's agenda? Some type of financial crisis. A government shutdown, which is very likely. I'm not sure you're going to get... I'm not sure there's the votes to raise the debt ceiling. Between Rhino Republicans and right side Republicans who don't want to raise the debt ceiling, and Democrats who are operating under this plan I'm outlining for you now, financed by Soros and orchestrated by Obama, the debt ceiling may very well not be raised. And you folks who have enjoyed profits in the stock market, you know, what goes up must come down. You never go broke making a profit. You might want to think about maybe taking it. And if that further paralyzes Trump's agenda, then the Democrats are that much further toward winning the foot race. And the foot race is 2018 and 2020. And let me go one step further, because that's not the end of their plan. These guys play long ball. That's why Barack Obama was planning this whole thing that he could use in some way, shape, or form with or against Hillary, and absolutely use against any Republican president, even though he didn't think they'd win. That's why he put this plan in effect long before the election. Long, long before the election. And that's why it's being executed so brilliantly, aided and abetted by Republicans who can't, you know, they open their mouth, they trip over their foot. There's an old saying in Ireland that goes back several hundred years. So Marshal Fox retreated with 30,000 men to turn and meet the foe again. Well, that, my friends, is Barry Obama. Marshal Fox retreated with 30,000 men to turn and meet the foe again. You need to watch your top knot, keep your knives sharp, and get involved. Send some money. Go to the political segment on our articles. Click on whichever one you want. Send $10, $20, send some money. Talk to your friends. Spread the word. I'm telling you, the battle has just begun. And we can't afford to lose it. Or everything we've done up to this point, Trump's election, a Republican Senate majority, the ability to perhaps shape the Supreme Court for two generations, is all going to go down the tube. We're going to lose the foot race. And let me tell you, if we lose that foot race, we're going to start losing the foot races, and Delaware is a canary in the coal mine. Mark my words. Delaware is a canary in the coal mine. We're going to start losing the state legislatures. And in the long ball plan, my opinion. I mean, what do I know? Poor old Hayseed in Wyoming. Out there plowing snow and feeding cows. I don't know squat. But here's what I think. If the progressives can get back to controlling a 75% majority of the state houses, they're a long ways from that now. They were close, but they've lost it. If they can get back to controlling 75% of the state houses, even if it takes 4 years or 6 years or 8 years, years which can be greatly shortened by redistricting and other plans which they've announced. I mean, they've told us. Just put the dots together. Connect the dots. Then you are going to see amendments to the United States Constitution, which will be passed by a Democrat majority in the Senate and will be ratified by the 75% of the states needed for ratification in Democrat-controlled legislatures. And that gets scary. And I might add that gets around completely, sidesteps, outflanks, outmaneuvers a conservative Supreme Court, even if the court was 7-2 conservative. Because it then becomes the Constitution. And that is what the court upholds. Something to think about. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Get involved, folks. The battle has just begun.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.